right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Alouette's Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. Hey, Cliff, have you gotten your tickets to the circus yet?
You know, it's funny you mention that, because with everything that's been going on, not even just this past week or even today, but this whole season in general, I'm reminded of what former Montreal Alouette Jeff Hecht, now of the, I almost said Calgary Stampeders, but he's actually now on the Saskatchewan Roughriders. During, was it 2014, the whole CFL/CFLPA labor dispute, or mm-hmm. almost labor dispute. Mm-hmm. I do recall once him tweeting out something to the effect of, if you invite a bunch of clowns, you're going to end up with a circus. And that has always stuck with me, not just through everything that's gone on over the past couple of years with this Montreal Alouettes team, but I mean, it just seems more poignant today than ever. And when I say today, I'm talking about Wednesday, September 13th, 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's,
that's about it.
and you know what? We might as well go ahead and lead with it. We'll get into the game coming that we had to deal with last week, but we might as well go ahead and lead with it, considering that it is the news today. And it's the second week in a row, really, that Rakeem Cato has had basically words with another one of his wide receivers. And it just so happens that, one is Stafford, that was today, and then just like last week, it was Ron Carter. From the video that was shot, and it's available on YouTube, we did retweet it out also. Did Cato take a swipe at Duron?
I didn't see necessarily a swipe. I think it was just a little bit of a shove.
Okay.
Like I said, it's not exactly the best video. It's not crystal clear, so it's really hard to see. But things have gotten heated, let's put it that way.
Yeah, they have gotten heated. Now the question is, Cliff, is that how much is it going to affect the team? I mean, considering how well Cato did last week, I know he didn't get the win, but does he need to pick a fight with one of his receivers every week for motivation? Or because, you know, with everything we saw on TSN, the reaction, it was same basically as last week. You know, he felt that he was a little disrespected. We don't know to what extent, though. But is this a 3-8 team in turmoil for him to basically out and say, listen, we're going to be 3-9 if we continue this crap? What can we make of this?
Well, it is what it is, unfortunately. I mean, yeah, this is a 3-8 team. They've been playing like a 3-8 team, and yeah, it's a tough call, because I see where Cato's coming from in the sense that he wants better. He wants his team to do better, and you can tell that he wants to be a leader on this franchise. And I can't fault him for that necessarily.
Right.
When he talks about being disrespected, though, I mean, I'm of the opinion too that respect has to be earned. I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, right now, things have been floundering, and circumstances have ended up with him back in front as the leader of this team. And I don't know if it's a matter of everything else that's behind him that's causing things to be where they are, and this is just sort of, this is all kind of, it's been building up for a while, or what exactly, but it's a tough situation for sure. And I kind of feel for the guy, because it can't be easy to have to deal with all this. And then you've got your teammates that potentially could be trying to get under your skin, or maybe just trying to test your resolve. And I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, the only people that really truly know what's going on are the guys in the locker room, and media, the fans, talking heads, what have you. They can speculate all they want, but at the end of the day, the players know what's going on. The best example I can show you right now is take a look at Jovan Johnson's Twitter feed. I mean, he just basically went out and he just put it out there saying, like, listen, you people, like, you see what you want to see, and you know, there's more to it than what you guys are looking at. So I mean, like, as far as Jovan's concerned, this team is still very much a united front, and these guys are still playing for each other, and yeah, people fight all the time. So it's perfectly natural. It's perfectly normal. I mean, it's not a good look for the team, mind you. And I don't know if Jovan can appreciate it in that sense. So, you know, coming strictly from a fan perspective or a media perspective or whatever, So again, there's so many moving parts here. It's really hard to really, you know, get a grasp on the situation. But like I said, as fans, this is where we're at. The players, they know what they have to do. They know how they have to handle their business. And the only thing we can hope for is that week in and week out, with every practice that they go through and every game that they play, that's what their job is. That's what they have to do. And we can only hope that they do their job as the best of their ability. And if they get some wins out of it as a result, then it's just so much the better.
So you're saying that it's all to do about nothing, everything that we've seen? Now, I agree. We've seen fights and practices before and stuff like that. I mean, with social media today and video cameras at the ready in our hands. And so it's nothing. There's no reason to be concerned.
Well, I'm just going by what Jovan said. And at the end of the day, he's in the locker room. We're not. I mean, like I said, it's not a good look seeing your starting quarterback going off half-cocked on his teammates and, mm-hmm. you know, teammates are getting into it as well. I mean, it's, again, I just don't know is it that competitive fire that, you know, every athlete truly has, or is this a team that's just in shambles? And like I said, it's really hard to say, but at the same time, if we're going strictly by looks, I mean, it's really not a good look for the Montreal Alouettes right now.
No, it is not. And you talk about this team and what we've seen and stuff like that. It's the Alouettes head to BC, which, as we have mentioned before, is that it is not a very friendly place for the Alouettes since they returned in 1996. And you know, this Alouettes vaunted defense that has been the best thing to talk about for this team so far. I kind of guess they fell into the hole of, wanting to play like wanting to be like the offense. And it was a very rough first half for the Alouettes, wasn't it?
It was awful. There's no run defense whatsoever. I mean, Jeremiah Johnson, running back for the BC Lions, he literally ran all over this Montreal Alouettes team. Like, this defense just couldn't stop him for love nor money. It was unbelievable. I mean, like, Jonathan Jennings, he had a pretty average night as far as quarterback goes. I mean, he did just enough to win as far as his quarterback in this team. I mean, the best strategy for him was just keep handing it off to Jeremiah Johnson, and like, he'll take you to the promised land. That's really what happened last Friday night in BC. Mm-hmm. There was no stopping this Johnson guy. I mean, it was unbelievable too. Three touchdowns he scored, over 150 yards on the ground. It was unbelievable. I even made the joke that does this guy have the Zika virus or something? Like, nobody wants to touch him.
Ah, I like that.
And
that's good.
Quite frankly, he couldn't be touched. Yeah, there's no stopping this guy. I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting there watching this game, and I'm befuddled. Like, again, like you had just said, like, you know, we talked about how well this defense runs and how dominant it's been over the years and all that. But this past Friday, they just looked average. And I mean, if this defense is looking average along with the offense right now, yeah, again, maybe there's a reason why this is a 3-8 team.
Yeah, they had given up they gave up over 200 yards of rushing offense in this game. It was the first time since, I think, back in 04, what was it, 01, 04, that they had since they had given up 200 plus yards in rushing offense. You talk about Jennings. Jennings didn't have a mediocre day at all. I mean, he was 24, 33, 341 yards, no picks, a touchdown. But to be fair, I mean, it's, you know, let's look at Rakeem Cato. I mean, he was 21 to 29 at 72% completion rating. Completion percentage, 255 yards, one touchdown, and no interceptions. But it took until the second half for this team to get going. And that, it's usually been the opposite way around. The team did look good once they started to get going. But the problem is, as I mentioned before, it was the offense, the defense this time around that let the team down rather than the offense.
That's true. I mean, a lot of people want to hang stuff on Rakeem Cato. And, you know, he's got to take his fair share of criticism as well. But, mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, like, he actually did show up to play. And once things started finally gelling, like, you almost wish there was like a fifth quarter of football, because I mean, if they could have just found a way to, like I said, corral Jeremiah Johnson even just a little bit, maybe keep at least one of his three touchdowns off the board and given Cato another even 10 minutes to really work with, because once he got going, like, he was just humming. And like I said, at that point you saw the Rakeem Cato that a lot of people were getting hyped about, and the Rakeem Cato that you thought, okay, hey, this could be the reason why we can let a Kevin Glenn go. And we'll get to that in a little bit as well. But yeah, like I said, unfortunately, the defense just flat out sucked.
Yeah, badly. Daron Carter had 76 yards receiving. B.J. Cunningham, another monster game, 101 yards. Nick Lewis, again, big yards, 71 yards. I would say, what would be the biggest thing that stood out to you the most? Was it the Daron Carter pass, or was it the new record holder, the new champion, the numero uno, Chip Cox, and his league-leading sixth return, fumble return for a touchdown?
Well, as impressive as that is, over the years, you kind of expect Chip Cox to stand up and play well. I mean, like, I've given him grief over the years because it seems like he's always good for at least one boneheaded penalty per game, but he's also usually good for one outstanding play. So I kind of expect Chip Cox to either deliver a massive hit or pick somebody off, or, you know, like he did on this past Friday, scoop up the ball and take it to the house. So that I kind of expect from him. What I don't expect is Daron Carter to throw passes. And it's kind of funny because earlier in the week, and starting this whole, you know, Cato versus the world thought that we have going on as of late, despite that little scuffle, if you're going to pull off a gadget play like that, you got to have everybody working on the same page. So, I mean, right. Like the fact that Cato was able to, you know, work with Daron long enough to complete that play to B.J. Cunningham, I mean, that was a thing of beauty, too. So, I mean, he rifled it right down the field, and it was absolutely incredible. I mean, just from start to finish, like, that was an absolutely fantastic play. So I would say of the two, yeah, it would definitely have to be Daron Carter with his 100% rating now as a passer.
Yeah. I mean, the Owls did everything. I mean, far as penalty-wise, they only had 3 penalties for the game, man. I mean, everything went well. And I know I said last week, and again, it's funny, you tweeted it out during the game itself that basically I was avoiding the game. And I do. I'll admit it. I avoided the game until later on in the night because I usually don't want to see what the score is. And based on that, I will see what the score is, and then I'll watch the game on tape afterwards. Still, despite how the team – I was pleased that the team was able to get it going. They scored in all 4 quarters in every type of way that they could. Again, I'm just not sold on Rakeem Cato. I know there are a lot of people out there who may be thinking completely different than I am. I know there are some of our seatmates at the stadium that love Rakeem Cato. I'm not 100%. I'm not sure. I mean, if you were to give an argument to me, Cliff, on why I should be more positive on Rakeem Cato, what would you tell me to sway me?
Well, the fact that his ceiling is so high, I mean, like, the guy really has nowhere to go but up. And like I said, he came in as a complete unknown last year. And yeah, he's been kind of found out a little bit. But like I said, I still go back to the argument that, is it necessary that Rakeem Cato himself is not a very good quarterback, or is it just the system he's put in? Because quite frankly, I really think it comes down to who's calling his plays. I mean, is he being used properly as far as the quarterback goes? I mean, he's not a pocket passer. I mean, the guy has read option written all over him. Like, this is the guy that should be, you know, using his feet as much as possible. I look at the example of, like, some of the other young quarterbacks that have come in throughout the years, and it's been a combination of mobility and just great play calling. I mean, best example, Jonathan Jennings himself. I mean, he hasn't been particularly outstanding, but he's extremely well coached, and you can see with each passing game he gets better and better. I mean, this is a guy, like I said, give him 2 years, I guarantee he will be up there with, like, the Bowley, Levi Mitchells, and Mike Rose, and Zach Caleros. There's no doubt in my mind. Like, I saw a lot of that in that first game that Montreal played against BC here at home, and even though I didn't think it was all that great of a game, I mean, like, the numbers don't lie. Like, he definitely put up some decent numbers this past Friday against Montreal, but yeah. I mean, consider the opponent, really. But I mean, like, the true test for him is going to be later on in the year, like when the playoffs roll around, and they're going to be facing a very dangerous Calgary Stampeders team, or even a very dangerous, all of a sudden, Winnipeg Blue Bombers team. So that's going to be the real test for him. But I mean, I'm telling you right now, in 2 years' time, I definitely see Jonathan Jennings as being one of those marquee quarterbacks. And can Rakeem Cato be that way? I want to say yes. I want to say that both he and Vernon Adams can be superstars in this league as well. But it always comes back to the coaching. And who's coaching him right now? Who's his quarterback coach? Anthony Calvillo. On paper, that sounds amazing. One of the greatest all-time quarterbacks is my coach. Holy geez, I'm going to be great at this. And it hasn't been. It's really come down to what with Calvillo. It seemed like towards the end of the game last week, I became a little more impressed with the way the play calling was done. It looked like he was finally able to open things up. And I can't help but wonder if that's what it's going to take, is a new quarterback. And just at this point, you're 3-8. Just say, fuck it. And open up the playbook and just go bananas. And let's just see what we have. Let's see what this team can do on the field. And right. I'm really hoping this past Friday's game is a little sample size of that. And I'm hoping that this coming Friday's game, we get to see a lot more of that with not only Rakeem Cato, but with what Anthony Calvillo has lined up for this Hamilton Tiger Cats team.
Right. By the way, I didn't expect for Lunatic to show up again this week. but hey, he's got a cult following so far, and it's only been one show.
I'm surprised he hasn't been made more.
Yeah.
But you know, I think we're at the point now. Like, I think as frustrated as we were watching that Ottawa Montreal game, I think this. And tell me if I'm wrong. Like, yeah, disappointment obviously is going to set in the fact that Montreal lost yet again, and especially being in such a parity-filled division like the Eastern Division is, the fact that we can't seem to gain any ground is frustrating. And
I'm at a different mindset.
But all things considered, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm at a different mindset than I was for the Ottawa game. Completely. Completely different mindset. I saw some positivity. I've seen, you know, maybe a change, but it has to happen for more than one game. I mean, you know, Cato is 4-8 in his career in starts. He's lost four straight. The plus side of this is that with Hamilton coming up this week, he is 2-1 as a starter. So, yeah, I'm not really in the same mindset. I feel a little bit better. You know, it's just the Ottawa game is just so damn frustrating. I mean, are we seeing a turnaround? I don't know. Remember, people need to go back and check out the history for the Owls. The last time, and I'm double-checking this as we say here, the last time that the Alouettes started at 3-8 was 2014, Cliff. And what did they finish off the rest of the season? Finished off the rest of the season at a stunning 6-1 with a new quarterback under center. It was at the time with Jonathan Crompton. So they finished that year 9-9, went to the playoffs. So anything is possible. I think in the recent history, it's only the second time since their return in 96 that they have been 3-8. So it's doable. It's doable. But we'll have to see. And maybe Hamilton will be that, but we'll talk about it a little bit more. But I'm positively optimistic with a little bit of a caveat.
And that's fair. I mean, that's the thing. You're absolutely right.
Again, because I'm not
anything
I'm
could not, happen. Not, I mean,
so going forward though, seeing this week, I mean, maybe this will be the turnaround with the with the Cato versus the world. There was a little bit more to this, and it is that two things from last week that came out after we shot after we taped the show, Cliff. And the one of the most interesting ones, because we have been, huge, staunch opponents of Jim Pott being a head coach here in Montreal. We know he's fired for less. Pop came out and said on TSN that it was not his goal, or correct me if I'm wrong here, Cliff, because I'm paraphrasing here, that he will not be the head coach in Montreal in 2017.
That's pretty much what he said. He's, I think he realizes now that it's just way too much to do. I think he's much better off finding someone else to be leading this team. And I mean, he has said in the past too that he doesn't really enjoy being a head coach. He does it not out of want, but out of necessity. But it's, like I said, my only concern right now is it's looking more and more like he's going to be handing over the reins to Anthony Calvillo. And I really hope that's not the case. And we've talked about it numerous times as to why we think it would be a bad idea at this juncture to hand the head coaching reins over to Anthony Calvillo. So now the real question comes as who will Jim Pott bring in as head coach, and can they potentially work with Anthony Calvillo? Because AC is not going anywhere. Would he accept being demoted down to like quarterback coach or something a little bit lesser? Or is Calvillo now so ingrained in the whole OC thing that maybe he wouldn't want want to take a step back. And the only way you're going to, like, at this point, you can't really knock, maybe you can't knock him down. Maybe the only thing they can do is knock him out, knock him up the food chain, which, like I said, it has all the potential to be bad as far as I'm concerned at this particular juncture. So I don't know. It sounds like a positive to have Jim Popp step aside, but it, like, what's the result? What's going to be the result of this as a result? I mean, this is what I'm wondering right now. Like, unless, like he did back in 2007, he fell on the sword, Jim Popp did, and he accepted the lousy record and the coming up short, all because he knew he was bringing Mark Trestman in. And the rest, as they say, is history there. So unless he's got another great potential candidate just sort of waiting in the wings, I mean, that's the real question right now is, let's say Jim Popp decides, you're absolutely right, Cliff, Tim, AC's not the guy yet. He will be one day, but not right now. Who am I going to bring in? And that's part of the fun, the mystery, maybe some of the heartache and headache of being a fan of this organization. But now we have to wonder, if Jim Popp's not coaching this team in 2017, and for some reason it's not Anthony Calvillo, then who will it be?
I think what we need to do is we need to sort of look and see what the mold that Dave Dickinson went through in Calgary. Being in the positions that he was before he actually became the head coach after John Huffnagel stepped down. It's not AC's time. And you know what? Maybe being demoted might be necessary because we have had great players in Montreal throughout Montreal sports history that they've come back, whether it be a coach or whatnot. And I mean, we get a lot of examples. Oh, you know, when it comes to the Canadiens, a lot of examples when it came to head coaches. But I don't think it's not AC's time yet. Let him learn. That's the main thing. Let him learn, because you become head coach. What's the next step? If you don't do well there, Cliff, you get fired. And whoever is brought in, whether it be Nolthorpe, whether it be somebody else, whether it be Kavis Reed, whatever, let AC learn. Let him learn. I understand that he is, you know, he was Montreal football, one of the best in pro football history. But let him learn. Let him learn.
And I want to believe that even AC himself wouldn't consider a demotion. If seriously, Jim Popp pulled him aside and said, Anthony, man, I want you to work on these two young quarterbacks. I want you to turn them into the next AC. It doesn't have to be done right away. I know it's going to take time because you weren't the next AC right away either. It took a couple of years for you to be in the oven to properly mature and percolate and become the AC that we all know and love. But I think if AC were to look...
Does anybody remember at Las Vegas? Hello.
Las Vegas, hell, the guy was hot garbage. And again, it wasn't all AC's fault. He was put into bad situation after bad situation. That seems to be like a theme for Anthony, is just being put in bad situations and people just expect him to, well, you'll figure it out. You're a smart guy, kind of thing. And yeah, you know, sometimes you do eventually figure it out, but it doesn't happen overnight. And I'm just wondering if that's going to be the case here. I mean, maybe it just wouldn't be such a bad thing. Maybe an AC would probably be very open to the idea of, you know what, let me just focus on these quarterbacks. Let me focus on these young guys and turning them into great quarterbacks. And then in a couple of years, once he's proven that, hey, you know what, this guy's actually really good, he could be the next quarterback whisperer, I wonder what he can do with an offense. And then just let him slowly get into that. Don't just throw him into the fire and just hope that it works out for everybody, because clearly it hasn't worked. It didn't work last year, and it sure as hell not working this year, other than like little dribs and drabs of offensive prowess. But I mean, we need that on a more consistent basis, and it's just not happening. So I would really hope that whoever the head coach is next year in 2017, whether it's someone that's already on staff or someone else being brought in, that they do find a way to keep Anthony Calvillo as part of this organization and hope that he's willing to accept, you know, I wouldn't say a demotion necessarily. I would just look at it as kind of taking a step back and just taking a look at things from a different perspective. That's how I would phrase it to Anthony. And I would want to believe that he would look at it that way as well. And you know what? If you're going to be that great coach that everybody thinks you could be, you know, your work will speak for itself. That's how I look at it. I mean, that's right. How it really worked out with a lot of these guys. I do believe that Anthony Calvillo in time can be a good coach. You can tell he wants it bad enough, but I just think right now he's just in such a terrible situation that any good that he does is going to be overshadowed by all sorts of things, such as these melees and practice and these awful play calls and everything else. So maybe it's just might be better off for AC just to sort of take things at a different perspective. And like I said, just keep him on this team, but focus on quarterbacking, because let's face it, as far as a quarterback goes, there are few that could equal what Anthony Calvillo has done. Very few. So to have this guy on staff, as far as I'm concerned, is a godsend. Just you got to use him properly. That's all there is to it.
No, I agree. I agree. And I know we can talk about this till we're blue in the face, but it'll be an interesting offseason to see. And I guess it'll depend on who is actually involved in the actual hiring process. Will Jim Popp actually have a say? Because, you know, we do know the Wettenhall family does like to have usually, obviously, it's going to have the last say when it comes to who's going to be the new head coach for the Montreal Alouettes. But I don't want to bet on AC. I don't want him to be the head coach. It's funny to say that of a man who did so much for this franchise. No, don't. We don't want you head coach right now, AC. We can wait a few years. As I said, take the same route that Dave Dickinson did. You know,
it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, mold it into your team, a team that you can take the helm to and lead them to the Grey Cup. So,
because let's face it, take a look at what Dickinson's done now. I mean, what are the Stampeders now? Like 9-1-1.
Mm-hmm. They've won. They're
in his first year of coaching.
Yeah, unbeaten in 10 straight.
I mean, again, it helps. I mean, and they've got good players. Don't get me wrong. They do have a very talented roster over there in Calgary. But I'm willing to bet a lot of that is because the coaching staff that's there is a cohesive unit and nobody was rushed along. Mm-hmm. And you know what makes me laugh? You know who's on that coaching staff?
No.
Ryan Dinwiddie.
Jeez.
Yep. But you know what? He's not being asked to create an offense out of scratch and pull stuff out of his ass. No. He's got probably the easiest job in the world, you know. Helping Bo Levi Mitchell be a great quarterback. Yeah. I mean, that's gonna be a really cush job. But at the same time, nobody's expecting much out of him. And guess what? These quarterbacks, all three of them. Bo Levi Mitchell and Andrew Buckley have been playing really well. Drew Tate, when he's gone in there, he's a great. I think he's their placeholder for a field goal kick. So he's doing that very well because Rene Paradis is kicking great field goals. So mm-hmm. So there you go. All three quarterbacks for the Calgary Stampeders are doing a fantastic job. So I guess Ryan Dinwiddie wasn't such a bad coach after all. It's just don't ask him to do too much too soon.
It's very possible that remember that that Calgary is doing what they're doing currently under what was Dave Dickinson's offense. So I know it's I'm not razzing on the Stamps. I mean, they're just doing absolutely amazing. They're doing what nobody thought they'd be doing this year. But no, it's true.
Owlett's Flight Deck presents Just the Stats with CFL statistician Steve Daniel.
Welcome back, Steve.
Nice to be here. Always good to delve into the numbers.
Something tells me, though, you're very happy that Labor Day's over with.
Yeah, you get 49 games in, and you do all these doubleheaders, and after a little while, they all kind of merge together.
That's just about to be tough. I mean, for those of you who don't know, Steve is, you know, he is the stats guy for the CFL, and having all those games, you really can't enjoy your holiday. It's not really a holiday for you, is it?
No. I love this work. It really is fun and it really is interesting. But there's times where you just would like to do something else besides a doubleheader, mm-hmm. and you know you just want to spend a little time. Your wife may say to you, "Let's do this," and it's the old excuse. Sorry, I have a game.
Yes, I know.
And there is that. There's this great Metallica line that I love. I quote it every now and again mm-hmm. In one of their songs. To the game, you stay a slave. Check that out. No, I really enjoy it. But this is the time of year where that gets to be the thing.
I can imagine. Well, we had a very interesting return of when it comes to the Labor Day classics. And some very interesting information that came over the wire, obviously, this week. And we were able to actually somehow be able to tie the two together. Where do you want to start this week, Steve?
Well, the Labor Day weekend resulted in some, you know, pretty good games to watch, mm-hmm. some trades,
yeah,
an indirect in-season trade of quarterback for quarterback, which forced me to go back into the dust off the record books, and I've found five of them of significance in the past, mm-hmm. Not the least of which was with the Hall of Fame game coming. A trade for one Hall of Famer for another event Metro Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's right. The Hall of Fame game is this Friday. And they're now going to be in Hamilton for the unforeseeable future, if I remember correctly. But that's something that Cliffy and I will delve into. But let's go ahead and let's see if we can figure out how this twist is when it comes to the Hall of Fame thing and combine with in-season quarterback for quarterback trades.
1983, you have a guy that was in the TSN booth last week. A very unusual man. Great guy. A little different. Dieter Brock. And he was one of the very first players to really try to play out his option at a time in the league's history where that didn't happen a great deal. And so he had some issues with the Winnipeg club there. Now well resolved. Really good guy. But a very, very free thinker, believe me.
Right.
So Winnipeg eventually traded him to Hamilton. Dieter was 4-1 as a starter at the time for Tom Clements, an equally talented quarterback. And so here you have two guys headed for the Hall of Fame with the numbers they were creating.
Right.
Traded for one another, which is really rare. And, you know, Tom Clements has 60 more starts for Winnipeg. And he was really – they won 41 of those games. So the Bombers clearly – did well out of that. And I think you can look at the trade this weekend.
Yeah, I was about to say, Bombers getting the best of a trade?
Well, they have Matt Nichols, and Matt is really producing.
Yes.
And so Drew Willey wasn't playing. And if you're a starting quarterback getting that sort of percentage of a team's salary cap, I have no idea, nor am I privy to what players make, but
right.
To have a fairly expensive backup quarterback means you're probably light in other areas. I try to stay out of the salary cap thing as much as I can, but it's plain that a team has to use that money effectively.
Exactly, exactly. And so, when we're talking about the quarterbacks, let's see, Montreal traded away. And the one we're talking to about specifically is obviously Kevin Glenn going over to Winnipeg. But I think you'd say that there are more than just one in-season quarterback for quarterback, right, besides what happened this past week?
I picked out five.
Okay.
There might be some backups that go unnoticed, but the first one that I've got on record is 1961 when the Lions traded away five players to get Joe Capp, who, again, he wound up in the Hall of Fame as well, and he started 91 games for the Lions after that
right.
and won them the Grey Cup in 1964. So that was an interesting trade-in for Jim Walton, who – really, you know, it wasn't much of a quarterback. 1974 was a major, major trade quarterback. Chuck Ely and Don Jonas exchanged between Hamilton and Winnipeg. Peter Lisk on Calgary's Wall of Fame. Here's more Hall of Fame or Wall of Fame stuff. Calgary traded him to the Lions, and he wound up starting two games for the Lions. They went 0-2. He had a few more starts, but not much. Then the Brock and Clements thing, and then John Huffnagel himself, the great Calgary football guy, quarterback, coach, got traded for the immortal Nicky Hall, who started once.
I was about to say, if anybody remembers him, because that's the first time I've heard the name. If anybody remembers, email me. You're going to win a gold star for that one, I tell you.
Nicky Hall. So some of the names are prominent, and it's interesting, actually. I know Kevin Glenn a little bit, and I spoke with him in Vancouver because Montreal was in BC to play the Lions, and Kevin was really upbeat, and I really admire Kevin, but he's on the other end of another trade, and yes, I got a question today, yes, he's been with eight different teams, and he's moving again to Winnipeg.
It's a question that I asked you and I sent out on my personal social media, just at least to ask this. Kind of, we have a few things we wanted to talk about this week. So the Alouettes, you know, their daunted defense gave up more than 200 yards in rushing this past week versus BC. When was the last time that the Alouettes gave up that much?
Well, the number I've got in front of me is part of that. It's it was the net offense. That's the one I got right on my screen in front of me.
Okay.
They gave up 585 yards of offense last week to the Lions, and 252 of those were rushing, I think. But it's been 15 years since they gave up that many yards, and again, it was BC, 622. So that was not Montreal's finest moment in terms of defense. They got in it later,
right?
But not off the top.
Chip Cox with his fumble return this week, actually set a new league record. What did he do?
It's one of my favorite ones, actually, because it's one of those things where you really have to be an opportunist. He had recovered, I think it was 8 fumbles by the opposition and returned 5 of them for touchdowns mm-hmm. before the season started. And he tied the all-time league record. And it took me quite a while to determine that record because in the past, the way stats used to be, a fumble recovery was just that, just a fumble recovery. It wasn't – we didn't split them between defense and offense. So
okay.
They lumped them all together. So once we separated that out, he had 5 touchdowns. Well, the one at BC was the 6th, and that makes him the all-time leading fumble return guy in the history of Canadian football.
Chips on the move for possibly setting some more or extending other records, isn't he?
Absolutely. His yardage in returning them is – that's number one as well. And, of course, he's moved up the tackles list. You know, total tackles since 1987, he's, I think, number 6 now. He's past Greg Battle. He's well up there. And the next guy's a bit up the ladder, but he passed Eddie Davis.
Okay.
He passed Greg Battle last time. He's passed Eddie Davis now. The next guy up the list is number 4, so Chip is 5.
Okay.
And that guy is Baron Simpson. Baron had 955 tackles, which is a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot of tackles.
But anyway, you're talking Willie Pless and Michael O'Shea.
There we go. Yep.
And Alondra Johnson above that, and that's it. So Chip's in some pretty elite company. Good on him.
Now, you actually brought up a very interesting stat you wanted to talk about this week, and I'm actually very intrigued to hear what it is. The most yards by 2 receivers on the same team the same year.
Oh, boy. This is a good one. We've been tracking the 2,000 receiving yard mark all year. Mm-hmm. And that's almost unattainable, even though it's a passing game now. With 18 games and the speed and the strength of the players, guys get hurt. But Adarius Bowman and Darrell Walker are both on pace for over 1,800 yards, which means their combined pace is almost 3,700. Well, the Alouettes actually hold the record for most receiving yards by 2 players on the same team in the same year. Jermaine Copeland and Ben Cahoon.
Okay, nice.
3,318. So Bowman and Walker are about 300 odd yards ahead of that pace. And only 6 combinations of players have ever gone over 3,000.
Wow.
And the second part of it is that there are, if you include Emmanuel Arsenault mm-hmm. and Marque McDaniel,
right.
there are 8 players threatening the 100 reception mark in the same year. Bowman's on pace for 131. But there's one guy that I want to talk about just for about 60 seconds, and that is Naaman Roosevelt of Saskatchewan.
Okay.
He is on pace for 124, and that's one more than that Saskatchewan club record. But the fun thing about it is that this stat that we keep now of targets.
Yes.
He has been targeted more than the next 2 Saskatchewan Rough Riders combined, Rob Bagg and I think Ricky Collins, or he said more than the next 2.
Wow.
In total. So they're throwing to him a lot.
That's actually crazy. That is actually.
And Bowman and Walker have exactly 50% of the targets on Edmonton.
Interesting.
Every other pass that they throw goes to one of those 2 guys. Well, one last point before I go, and that is your listeners, here's an insight question, actually. With the rule change that we made, mm-hmm. where a coach now loses their timeout
right.
on the first challenge if it's unsuccessful,
mm-hmm.
did the number of challenges go up or down on a per-game basis?
I would say – I think they went – didn't they go down?
Yes, a little. They went down from about 2.5 down to 2.25.
Okay.
So it's one less challenge every 4 games or so, or something along those lines.
But it shows that maybe that the coaches aren't trying to find something frivolous just to call, just to see if they can get it overturned.
I think that's one of those rule changes that's going to turn out to be beneficial. It's brought it into a little more balance, which is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And I like that that's the case.
Fantastic.
But we'll see where it goes. Anyway.
Fantastic. Well, once again, appreciate it as always, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Another story was done by the Gazette's Herpetkowski, and actually spoke with Al's owner, Bob Wettenall, about what we talked about last week and the possible new ownership. He's adamant, Cliff, that they're not for sale. And they are going to be within the hands of the Wettenahl family for years to come. And I, you know, that's fine. I have no problem with that at all. Because as I think Herb pointed out, and I think you and I may have reiterated many a time, without them, you know, Michael Gelfand, that was the one. He could have killed this Alouettes franchise. And if Bob Wettenahl hadn't taken over when he did, we may not be talking about what has happened since 1996 now. So I don't mind if he doesn't. If he's not selling the team, he's not selling the team. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, and I've said it before, like, the guy's passionate about football, for sure. The whole family is passionate about football. So, again, at the end of the day, I think we spoke about the fact that would some fresh blood be a welcome addition? Absolutely it would. But you know what? At the end of the day, if you've still got the fire inside of you, if you've still got the passion to do well and to be a success, then that's good enough for me too, as far as I'm concerned. That should be good enough for Alouettes fans as well. And like you said, Mr. Wettenahl has been a fantastic owner for these for the better part of 20 years. And if his family still takes, if they take over the team when he's gone and keeps running it the way that it has been, so keeps paying the bills and everything like that, then stability wise, that's what all you can ask for from an ownership group.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess at this point, it would just be a matter of happy with the offense and everything like that. But I mean, sorry, with the attendance. But look at the last 4 years. What do you expect?
Sure.
So.
You're absolutely right. And again, it's not going to be like that forever. I really think once some true leadership and true stability comes into play, and that essentially means Jim Popp goes back to the front office, goes back to being the general manager that we all know and love, goes back to being that talent scout that finds that obscure player that no one's ever heard of, but then all of a sudden can come in and light it up, as opposed to trying to coach and, you know, make things even worse than what they already are, I think things will be fine. They have no choice but to be fine. But it just comes down to finding the right people. And you had spoken about this earlier. Would Jim Popp be involved in the hiring process? I sincerely hope so. Because when he is involved in the hiring process, that's when you bring in a Don Matthews. That's when you bring in a Mark Trestman. And I don't know if you saw this or not, but according to La Presse, I believe it was, did you know that Hugh Jackson was actually being courted to come up here to Montreal before Dan Hawkins?
Okay. No, I did not know that.
Yeah. And for those of you that don't follow the NFL, like right now he's currently the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, which is a fate worse than death, it seems. But for years, he was also the offensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that has been extremely successful at least getting to the playoffs and managing to score several points. So, I mean, if you're looking for an offensive-minded coach, that would be the guy to do it. And Jim Popp had, at one point, actively courted this guy to come up here to Montreal and get his start as head coach. It didn't work out the way, obviously, because he ended up staying in Cincinnati, and instead we brought in Dan Hawkins. But one can't help but wonder what could have been had Jim Popp managed to convince Hugh Jackson to come up here and be the coach of this Alouettes team. Mm-hmm. One can only wonder. So at the end of the day, if I were to have my way, if the Wettenahl family is thinking clearly, and I want to believe that they will be this time around, you know what? Maybe we should get Jim to figure this out. Maybe we should trust Jim's instinct when it comes to not necessarily the coaching of things, but at least finding that talent. Because, I mean, Lord knows he can find talent on the football field, and he's done it in the past too, finding talent on the sidelines. So maybe we should let him get a say in this. That would be my thought process anyways. That's where I would be taking it.
Yeah, and maybe it would be cool to be a fly on the wall with that. But let's see if we can finish up the 2016 season first. Another interesting thing that and what's funny about this thing, it actually been talked about ever since the thought that I think that Herb may have broken it at the Gazette, talk about how Ricky Ray was done for the season. You know, usually that type of stuff, if it is true, the league will usually pick up on the social media accounts and retweet that type of stuff. But this is something that they actually stayed clear with. But, you know, Kevin Glenn was in the talks about that too, or it was rumored on TV, you know, for this, who would Toronto pick up? And lo and behold, you know, Kevin Glenn is traded, you know, 1 week after being demoted to the backup spot behind Raheem Cato. He's traded to not Toronto, but he's traded to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. So we go from having a an experienced quarterback, veteran quarterback, to who is the most experienced quarterback on this team now?
Jonathan Crompton.
I was going to say Jonathan Crompton, who's not even on the active roster yet,
and he's not even playing. Yeah.
So, what is your thought? Because I think sort of the other thing that happened this week too is, you know, with the Argos picking up Drew Willey in another trade, and they also still had Dan LeFevre playing, and look what he did this week. Did it, by the way, when you saw how well his stats were and how well he played, did it make you think, why the hell? I understand he was hurt, but why the hell did we let him go?
No. I've never been extremely impressed enough with Dan LeFevre. I think he's been serviceable, but not someone that I would want to entrust as a leader. He did play overall pretty well this past Sunday in Toronto. He definitely got the win, so props to him for that. But there's just something about how he, like, just, again, it could just be the system too. Like, this is what it comes down to. What if they said tomorrow that Tom Brady could come and play for the Montreal Alouettes? We'd all lose our shit, right?
No.
We'd be excited.
No.
Oh my God, Tom Brady is going to play for the Alouettes.
No, okay. I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't.
Don't lie. You'd be excited.
I would not.
I guarantee you.
I can tell you right now, no.
Okay.
I hate Tom Brady. I respect him.
All right.
I hate Tom Brady.
Hate's a strong word, Tim.
I hate Tom Brady. Wait. Do I need to make this even more succinct? Do I really have to?
Please do.
Okay. I hate Tom Brady. That's how much I hate Tom Brady. Anyways, as you were saying.
Yes. Well, if we were to bring in an elite level NFL quarterback tomorrow to run this team,
Vince Ferragamo.
Given the play calling that we've had from Anthony Calvillo and Jacques Chapdelaine, yeah. Pretty much. That's what would happen. It would just be, he'd look terrible. Anybody would look terrible in this particular system that's going on right now. And the fault for that has to lay at the coaching staff. So I honestly don't think Dan LeFevre would have lasted any better than what Jonathan Crompton would have, or what Rakeem Cato did last year, or even Brandon Bridge when he was here. Played decent enough, but at that point it was just completely cast asunder as well. So yeah, at this point, I really think it has to do more with the coaching staff and the play calling and the selections than anything else when it comes to who should be quarterbacking this team. At this point, I really don't think it matters anymore, because I'm also hearing too that Jacques Chapdelaine has been suggesting a lot of plays and they're just not being used either. So, I mean, there's that kind of disconnect as well as AC perhaps thinking that he doesn't need the help, that maybe he's stuck in a bad situation and he thinks he can pull himself out, much like what Jim Popp seems to think he can do.
Right.
And it's not working. So to answer your question, no, I just don't think I think Dan LeFevre, like I said, very serviceable quarterback. He'll definitely get the Argos through that little stretch until Drew Willey is ready to step in under center and keep the Argos afloat, or keep them from completely collapsing too, because that's essentially why they traded for him. And my gosh, they paid a king's ransom for him. Like a first round pick and a second round pick, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's a pretty heavy price. I mean, Drew Willey is a decent enough quarterback, but I didn't think he was worth quite that much. But I guess desperate times call for desperate measures. And when you don't have Ricky Ray in your lineup anymore, and you've entrusted your system in Dan LeFevre and Logan Kilgore, yeah, I can see a bit of a panic trade happening. And I think that's what happened on Sunday night. Was Jim Barker and the Argos, they wanted to make sure that everything was going to be steady, if nothing else, at least keep their heads above water. And by trading for Drew Willey, man, why can't I say that name properly? Anyways,
I can think of 350,000. I think
by doing that, by trading for Willey,
1,000 reasons why you can't say that name properly.
Fair point. Yeah. So
moving forward,
they did what they had to do. I can understand why the Argos made that trade. And good on the Blue Bombers as well to sort of shed that salary, and also to still be able to add a veteran presence, because Matt Nichols, as good as he's been playing this year for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, I don't see that lasting too much longer either. Or, God forbid, he gets hurt. And in which case, who better to call on than the man who has always been known as the best insurance policy of the Canadian Football League, Mr. Kevin Glenn.
Now, going forward, though, what does this team have? I mean, they lose his veteran presence. I mean, we do have a lot of other veterans on this team, but having a veteran quarterback, does everything fall on to AC now, being that he is basically the veteran presence when it comes to being a veteran quarterback, even though he is a coach now? Or is it now time for this team to gel amongst themselves and to utilize what they have as a team? You know, we heard today that it was mentioned on social media today that for the first time that people have noticed, they pulled what did they call it? They called it a Trestmanism, I think it was, where starting O was playing against a starting D today in practice. So is it a change? You know, we have fights every week. We can look into them how we want. You know, going forward, we have a game on Friday. Going forward, what does this Alouettes team do to become a team once again?
Well, yeah, I think at this point, like I said, I think I know we saw a little snippet of that this past Friday with the play calling being done. Like, I really think that Calvillo just decided to throw caution to the wind and just start throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. And I think that's the attitude you have to take now. I mean, you're 3-8. The playoffs right now are—they're
still obtainable,
believe it or
especially
not,
in
within
the East,
grasp.
Still obtainable, yeah.
But I mean, you're running out of time. I mean, if you don't win this Friday in Hamilton, I wouldn't necessarily say that's the final nail in the coffin. My God, it's going to be one of them. I mean, because you're going to have a bye week. You're going to come back home. You're going to play Toronto, who by that time Drew Willie might be ready to go. Then you're going to go play in Calgary. And if you think Montreal is bad when they go to BC Place and play, they're just as bad, if not worse, when they go play at McMahon Stadium out in Calgary. Because Calgary, the Stampeders, they own the Alouettes out west. And again, these are the games you just have to find a way to win. And if they don't, then there's really no coming back at this point. So, I mean, like, the desperation, it is officially desperation time on this team. So you've got to do whatever it takes to win at this point. So, I mean, if Raheem Cato getting in scraps with his receivers is going to fire this team up, then so be it. If Anthony Calvillo is just going to throw, like I said, caution to the wind and just really truly finding the plays that are going to work with his quarterback, do it. These are the things you have to do now. I mean, this team is officially in a free fall. Can they pick themselves up? I have the talent to do so. I just think it's got to come down to someone's got to step up and say, hey, guess what? This is my team. I'll be damned if any of you are going to let me fall. I'm bringing you like a guy like a Nick Lewis, who has put this team on his back all year. We need more guys like that. We need more guys to step up and say, you know what? I got this. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And if we can just see like a little bit more of that, potential is there. Like you said, anything can happen. 2014, we were more or less in the same boat. New quarterback comes in and just sets the world on fire. And there were a lot of ugly games there, but they were still wins. And that's what it comes down to right now. This team needs to win. I don't care how they win. I don't care if they, you know, kick each other's ass along the way in doing so. If that's what it's going to take, then do it. That's all there is to it. And, you know, is Raheem Cato ready to be this leader? Is he ready? It sounds like it. I mean, if he's that fired up that he's jaw-jacking with his receivers and trying to fire, you know, get them all fired up, because apparently he was never like this when he was in college. If that's what he thinks he's got to do to make this make a statement, to let the team know that this is going to be fun, then fine, do it. But at the end of the day, you still got to produce the results. And this is where Anthony Calvillo and Raheem Cato were together. Got to sack up, take this team on their backs, and win. That's all there is to do it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this team comes out in Hamilton this week. You know, it's a normal game, you know, Eastern time zone. It's just a matter of how they're going to come out. And I guess that's what we're going to have to see. Again, it's team. It's not I, it's team. It's nice to get, you know, individual accolades and stuff like that, but you're still a team. You have to play as a team. You don't, you're going to lose, and you're going to continue to lose. So, yeah. Hamilton, second game of the road trip before they have a bye. As you mentioned before, Jim Popp is 5-5 all time in the regular season versus Hamilton. As I mentioned before, Raheem Cato is 2-1 when he starts against Hamilton. What do what does Montreal have to do in order to win? Obviously, I think the main thing is that they need to shore up their run defense somehow and not allow a team to get up by, what was it, 21, 21-3, 21-6, and have to and then have to claw back.
That'd be a great start.
But other than that, what I'm trying to see one stat here that time penalties are down. That's a plus.
If I recall correctly, last year that was one of the things that sort of sunk the Hamilton Tiger Cats. That first game, their first official loss, by the way, at Tim Hortons Field, came at the hands of the Montreal Alouettes. But I do remember that they were not disciplined whatsoever, and Montreal managed to take advantage of that. They got great field position as a result. I think that's going to be key as well, because again, these referees are just, you know, an abomination, quite frankly. And every team is going to say that, especially every losing team is going to bitch about the referees. And to a degree, there's something to that. So at the end of the day, you've got to know how these referees are going to be, and you got to work with it. So you got to be better. You got to be more disciplined. Mm-hmm. And that's easier said than done this year when it comes to the Alouettes. But again, you said it last week, only three penalties. So the potential's there. These guys know how to stay disciplined. They just got to do that and see if they can get, you know, see if they can draw a few penalties offside for Hamilton, for example, or just take full advantage of, like, you take a look at what Toronto did this past Sunday against Hamilton.
Yeah.
I mean, they worked their plan to perfection. I mean, like I said, Dan Lefevre looked good. He didn't look great. He didn't look like a world beater, but he just did the little things. And Toronto just had, or Hamilton, sorry, had no answer for them whatsoever. So, I mean, if Montreal can work a similar plan, and I truly believe that Raheem Keita was a lot more talented than Dan Lefevre. I'll go ahead and I'll say that much at least. I think just pure talent-wise, I think Raheem Keita, and he's done it before as well. Last year, that first win for the Alouettes, the first loss suffered by the Hamilton Tiger Cats was as a result of Raheem Keita and the Montreal Alouettes. Mm-hmm. And he played a great game, and there's no reason why he can't play another great game as well. Like, if he's taking all this anger and frustration from what's been going on at training camp these past couple of weeks, if he takes it out on this Hamilton team, watch out. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to, is using your weapons and just being smart about it. And again, the talent is there. There's no question about that. AC has shown flashes of brilliance as far as coaching goes. If somehow the stars can just actually align and this team actually lives up to some of its potential, the possibilities are endless as far as I'm concerned. I definitely think there is still hope that our little bet or our little prediction about this road trip going, this two-game road trip, being a 1-1 affair. Mm-hmm. I still think it's possible. But like I said, you got to take care of things. And like I said, I just hope that all this bluster, all this, you know, chicanery, if you will, of these like practices and these fights and all this other stuff that's swirling around this team, I hope it just galvanizes them. I hope it just helps strengthen their resolve and they just sort of really do take that us against the world mentality and just take out all their frustrations on a Hamilton team that, like I said, is beatable. Mm-hmm. And on paper should have destroyed the Toronto Argonauts again. But what happened? Toronto just kicked them in the face a few times and they managed to win the game. So Hamilton's a very beatable team too. Anyone in the East is definitely, there's no question about that as far as I'm concerned. So Montreal can just work their plan. Like I said, take all their anger, all their frustrations, everything that's been sort of festering right now, and just take it out on this Hamilton Tiger Cats team. I can't help but be just a little bit positive. Maybe, you know, call me a homer if you want, but that's just how I feel. I think that if Montreal can just get their together and figure it out once and for all, they'll post at least a couple more wins this season. It won't be a complete wash. That's what I think.
I think for the Owls, they did a very good job last week with a balanced offense with passing and with rushing. Defense itself, you know, you need to stop Luke Tasker, you need to stop CJ Gable, you need to stop, it's just a matter of, you know, Fantuz, you gotta stop these guys. You cannot let Dan Lefevre have the same type of game that he had last week. The Owls defense, let's hope it's just a one game blip. I mean, the Owls are still one of the best teams in the league when it comes to least passing yards against per game. So there is that. It's just a matter of being able to shore up the other aspect of it. Remember, again, the Owls have been lived and died by the defense this year. They've had to. But if this offense is getting this hot or is starting to gel, even after one game, good things can come. Again, maybe we can have that run that we had 2 years ago. you know, unfortunately, you got to take it one game at a time. So would be nice to get Billy Parker back. Isn't this going to be his last week? Isn't he projected to be back after the bye week?
Could be, but I mean, to his credit, Greg Henderson, in his absence, has actually been playing fairly well. And don't take my word for it. Earlier this evening, Jovan Johnson had a little impromptu Q&A on his Twitter account, and I just flat out asked him, like, of the young guys that you've been working with this season, who's really impressed you? And that was the name that stood out for him, along with Jonathan Mincy, as two guys that have done some really decent things and are getting better with every single day. So, yeah, I mean, having a veteran presence like Billy would be fantastic, but, I mean, at least you can sort of take comfort knowing that while he didn't have the greatest start to his CFL career, Greg Henderson did, he's come along, I'd say, pretty well, all things considered. I mean, still a rookie, still going to make rookie mistakes. Everybody does. But, you know, if Billy is still injured, at least we can sort of take comfort knowing that Greg Henderson's there and he's at least, again, not dominating, but he's at least keeping your head above water. So, I mean, I personally would love to see Billy back because, again, when he's on this field, good things tend to happen. And I'm just hoping that, you know, if he can come back a little bit sooner than expected, if only to provide an extra little bit of leadership presence in the secondary, along with Jovan Johnson, mm-hmm. so much the better. But at least for now, we know that Greg Henderson can, you know, he can keep the seat warm, if nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm reading this correctly, as of this week, Montreal's number one in the league when it comes to opponent pass yards per game. They're only giving up 290.9. So, and, you know, I love how they, you know, with Nick Lewis, the second down god that he is right now, getting first downs, keep it going, but mix things up a little bit. I'm intrigued to see this matchup, just to see what a second week in a row with a fight or a scuffle does to this team. If it brings them together, hey, do it every week. I guess just not in front of the cameras from where you have to talk about it, right? And make up reasons why it happened and give the same old when it comes to why it happened and respect and da-da-da-da-da, right?
Like I say, it can go one of two ways. Like I said, all of this bickering and infighting and all these other shenanigans are either going to strengthen this team like nothing else, or it's just going to completely explode and, you know, may as well just forfeit the rest of the games and go right on to 2017. It's going to go one of two ways, but
yeah. We'll see.
I'm curious to see just what's going to happen because, yeah, this is truly Ricky, good, bad, or other, and this team's going to have to play for him and with him. So that's going to be, for me, the big thing right there is, can this team step up and be there for him? Because he needs them just as much as they need him. So did I say that right? He needs them just as much as they need him. So again, it's a team effort. There's no I in team. It's not about you. It's about the team. Right. And I'm really hoping and praying that this Friday against Hamilton, that these guys realize that and they just somehow just find a way to say, to hell with all of these haters, to hell with everyone just, you know, constantly kicking us when we're down. We're going to come out swinging and whatever happens, happens. And if somehow we end up on top of the pile and we live to fight another day, that'd be pretty awesome too.
Exactly. And I think it's probably the best way to leave, to finish up the show this week. So enjoy the games. Enjoy the game on Friday. Enjoy the rest of the CFL docket this week. Cliff, I know it's tough leg for you and me as Owls fans, because I know we don't have a home game for another 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. But we will survive, and we will be back again at Percival Molson on Sunday football in the next 2 weeks. So it should be fun. So have a good week, everybody.
Yeah, and I can't wait.
Yep. So everybody have a good week. And for everybody here at Alouette's Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach. Jacob!